Hi. My name is Scott. I am one of Newport's pastors. Newport is a Christian faith community that belongs to a family of churches and ministries called the Covenant. Centrally important to us is a collection of ancient writings commonly known as the Bible. Even more crucial to us is Jesus Christ of Nazareth, a person we believe to be fully human and fully God, and with whom we believe a living relationship can be enjoyed in this world and the next. Since the start of summer, we have been exploring an especially ancient text called Exodus, which is part of the Bible. It's an account of the deliverance of the Hebrew people from their enslavement in Egypt. Is it odd that a Christian group would spend an entire summer studying a Jewish story? Jesus is the reason for that. He was a Jewish rabbi who treasured the Hebrew scriptures. So we seek to understand them through him. Take a breath. Feel your feet on the floor, whether it's the floor of the sanctuary, or maybe it's the floor of your kitchen, if you are on the other side of a screen. Maybe it's the floor of a vacation cabin, or the ground of a campsite. Feel your feet there, and allow yourself a moment of gratitude for the air conditioning, or a gentle breeze, and for the chair that holds you, or the cup of coffee you're holding. Maybe you have a lake view from where you are listening today, or maybe a view of Puget Sound, or Cannon Beach. Wherever you are, land there now. Listen. In her June 20th sermon, Pastor Britta contrasted the unknowing Pharaoh with the knowing God. Without regard for history and lacking any inclination toward relationship with the Hebrew people, Pharaoh's fear-fueled assumptions about them spun into false narratives and conspiracy theories, which led to dehumanizing and deliberately unknowing this population of non-Egyptians. Perhaps predictably, that set the stage for brutality. The Hebrews were a resilient people, creatively resisting their oppressors. A child named Moses was born within that resistance and reared in the tension between two nations that existed in the same geography. On the following Sunday, Pastor Britta introduced us to grown-up Moses. Caught between two worlds and belonging nowhere, he must have held searing trauma in his body. Rage smoldered beneath the surface until it exploded in violence, leaving an Egyptian person dead. Suddenly, Moses was persona non grata among both the privileged and the oppressed. He fled to the borderlands, where he drew clear water from a deep well. He defied injustice with a neighborly act of kindness rather than rage, and began a long, slow journey of healing and rehabilitation. On the 4th of July, Pastor Paul taught us about the encounter Moses experienced with God at the burning bush. The fire was strange, illuminating without incinerating. The ground was holy under his bare feet. What would holy ground feel like under your feet, under your bare feet? And Moses heard God calling him to do something impossible. He asked, "Who am I to even attempt such a thing?" God answered, "I will be with you." Then Moses asked, "Who are you?" God essentially answered, "Yes." "Who are you?" "Yes. I am who I am." As Pastor Paul underscored for us, God assured Moses that God is being itself. God is presence itself. Who am I and who are you? Both were answered with God's abiding personal presence. Pastor Britta exhorted us on July 11th to reinterpret disruptive, uncomfortable pressure as a life-revealing force. The Creator knows that for humans, knowing and being known by God is the core of our formation into wholeness. She clarified that this form of knowing is far more profound than assimilating information. She called it beholding and said, "Beholding God leads to a tenderness of heart, over-reliance on dogma and certitudes tends to harden our hearts." The following week was about getting ready to go. God releases captives. That is the God we worship here this morning and every week. Escape from oppression is thinkable. Liberation from captivity can happen. Part of our worship is remembering with gratefulness God's works of deliverance. The simple way of Jesus leads out of enslavement. Thanks be to God. On the last Sunday of July, Pastor Paul presented two contrasting modes of fear, terror and reverence. Of course, in everyday life, the contrast can be blurry. The trauma of the people leaked into their faith. Their reverence for God was tinged with terror. And on the other hand, they were tempted by a rose-colored nostalgia for Egypt, even though it had been the site of their abuse. As Pastor Paul noted, the familiarity of captivity is compelling, and it felt safer to remain in bondage than to move through the transformative work of liberation. It is work, isn't it? internal and external. Works of justice and kindness and soul work. Rehab from our personal enslavements. Rebirth and baptism into new life. Pastor Britta preached about manna and quail on August 1st. God's bountiful provision through nature's miracles interrupted Israel's ingrained habits of desperate exertion. The people needed new rhythms. God provided daily bread and weekly rest as a practical template for livable wholeness. Last Sunday, Pastor Britta described the impossible burden Moses shouldered by personally adjudicating all of Israel's civil disputes. She said Moses was blind to his limitation. He was immersed in his own circumstances. As the saying goes, we don't know who discovered water, but we're pretty sure it wasn't a fish. So it took someone with an outside perspective, in this case it was Moses' father-in-law Jethro, to clarify the problem and its solution. Breaking free from the culture of exertion and exhaustion took time, patience, wisdom, humility, courage. It turns out there is much more to freedom than escape. Jethro admonished Moses to convey God's instructions to the people, explaining how they were to live, and delegating the arbitration of cases to appointed judges throughout the neighborhoods and communities of the nation. The Ten Commandments would provide these freshly minted judges with a clear, concise, and consistent map for community-honoring justice. So that's where we are today, the Ten Commandments. We've got Exodus chapters 19 and 20. I'm not going to read all the way through both of those chapters. Let's start out with chapter 19, verses 3 through 6, because this is our current memorization paragraph. Hear the word of the Lord. Then Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain and said, "This is what you are to say to the descendants of Jacob and what you are to tell the people of Israel. You yourselves have seen what I did to Egypt and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all nations you will be my treasured possession. Although the whole earth is mine, you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words you are to speak to the Israelites." So the rest of Exodus chapter 19 describes Moses carrying messages back and forth between God and the people. Three times he travels up and down the mountain. Okay, maybe it wasn't Mount Rainier, but it was a mountain. Three times up and down, taking messages back and forth between God and the people. The conversation's rhythm is visible as he ascends and descends again and again. The Ten Commandments will not be a mechanism for lessened dependence upon God's personal presence. The commandments are essential, and they are inadequate. Hear me. The Ten Commandments are essential, and they are inadequate. They were never intended to be a proxy for relationship between humans and their maker. All right, let's get to the main event here. Exodus 20, verses 1 through 19. Here are the Ten Commandments. And God spoke all these words, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an image in the form of anything in heaven above, or on the earth beneath, or in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of the parents to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing love to 1,000 generations of those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not hold anyone guiltless who misuses his name. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them. But he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Honor your father and your mother, so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God is giving you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not give false testimony against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or his male or female servant, his ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. When the people saw the thunder and lightning and heard the trumpet and saw the mountain in smoke, they trembled with fear. They stayed at a distance and said to Moses, "Speak to us yourself and we will listen. But do not have God speak to us, or we will die." We're going to come back to that in a minute. But first, I just want to—I want to give you my impressions of what these Ten Commandments are shaping. God's passion is for exclusive relationship. God connects directly with humans and does not favor indirect responses. God won't abide being co-opted or triangulated. Rest is holy and meant to be experienced personally. It's right for humans to honor the humans that made them. Humans are to respect the image of God in humans and preserve human life. Humans are to respect relationships and celebrate God's goodness and mercy to other humans. Humans are to use their gift of speech for truth and blessing. Humans are to use their gift of imagination for generosity. The commandments were not about fencing Israel's freedom as much as mending the wounds of their enslavement. The commandments are not about fencing our freedom as much as mending the wounds of our enslavements. As I said earlier, we belong to a denomination called the Covenant that is a family of churches and ministries. Among our many ministries is an anti-sex trafficking initiative called Free. Today is Free Sunday. And therefore, we, along with many other covenant churches, are shining a light on the Free initiative this morning.
God who sees, God who hears, God who transforms. We pray for the transformation of our unjust and violent world.
Around 4.7 million people are caught in sex trafficking globally every year, and the average age of a sex trafficked victim is only 13 years old.
God who sees, God who hears, God who transforms, instill in us a teachable spirit to learn in order to gain awareness that moves us into action in order to break the cycles of trafficking.
Worldwide, sex trafficking generates $99 billion in profits. 40% of those confirmed trafficking cases are of Black women and girls. And studies have found that Native Americans and Native Alaskans are disproportionately represented in sex trafficking.
God who sees, God who hears, God who transforms, creates in our heart a willingness to give to the prevention, the intervention, and the rehabilitation of trafficked children and adults to create safer and more holistic communities.
Marginalized people are deemed disposable by those with power, robbing them of their God-created freedom and dignity.
God who sees, God who hears, God who transforms, make us companions to act through advocacy with the survivors to pursue your shalom for all of our communities.
Through Free, a collaborative initiative of Serve Globally and Love Mercy Do Justice, we engage with the issue of sex trafficking by mobilizing the global church through the framework of pray, learn, give, and act domestically and globally.
God who sees, God who hears, God who transforms, remind us today to be your church. Remind us that our liberation is tied to the freedom of others, and move us in ways only you can to pray, learn, give, and act together so that all may be free.
God in heaven, have mercy. Set these captives free. Break the power of greed. Break the power of lust. Interrupt the cycles of brutality. Bring wholeness and healing. Bring fullness of life. Mend the wounds of enslavement. Establish freedom so people may worship you throughout the earth. Amen. We must do the work of kindness and justice. We must not lose heart in the face of daunting injustice and brutality. We must not postpone our hopes for shalom until heaven. Now is the right time. We must be about God's work of setting captives free and mending the wounds of enslavement. And the work will not be finished in this version of the world. We will continue to carry inside us the gnawing sense that something's off, something's wrong. The world isn't right. We're not right. I'm not right. Individually and collectively, we continue to thirst for more. The Ten Commandments were never meant to quench that thirst entirely. In fact, the commandments intensify our thirst. Remember, God sought and ever seeks a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. In other words, God desires ongoing personal interaction with each of us. But the Hebrew people, the ones who were uniquely chosen by God, preferred distance. They wanted Moses to mediate the relationship because they imagined God would kill them if they got too close. Their terror of Pharaoh had contaminated their reverence for God. Their habits of captivity had distorted their picture of themselves as a holy nation. Fear sowed seeds of a future oppression that took the form of a self-inflicted religious captivity. They opted for a centralized priestly class that would ultimately imprison them inside prohibitions, protocols, and ordinances that barred the way to their direct enjoyment of God. Jesus said no thank you to that. He was less polite about it, to be honest. He went up on a mountain and preached a great sermon. You may have heard of it, the Sermon on the Mount. Declaring freedom for captives, very much like the Ten Commandments, his words were medicine for the wounds of enslavement. Jesus pointed the people toward a sort of righteousness that resisted commodification by the religious elite. Do you understand what I mean by that? Jesus said we'd need a righteousness that was greater than that of the Pharisees. And the Pharisees were experts at legalism, rules, not only for themselves, but especially as a way of controlling the people and of preserving their own power and privilege. So when Jesus said that we would need a righteousness greater than theirs, he did not mean we should beat them at their own game. He was not instructing people to be even more rule-bound than the extremists. By greater, he meant of a more excellent sort. Righteousness that rests in relationship with God is immune to the paralyzing venom of legalism. As soon as he came down from the mountain, after delivering this epic sermon, Jesus met a person suffering from a repulsive and devastating skin disease. Jesus touched and healed that person. Jesus touched. Near the culmination of his time on earth, on a day when he was celebrating God's deliverance of Israel from enslavement, Jesus showed his followers the full extent of his love. How did he do that? How did Jesus show his followers the full extent of his love? He didn't give them signed scrolls of his latest sermon. He didn't perform an encore of his most famous miracles. Seriously, though, the narrative doesn't jump directly to the cross from there. Jesus showed them the full extent of his love by washing their feet. Try to imagine what that would have been like. The best I can do is holy awkwardness. Judging from the account, only Peter was able to find words, and he was clearly squirming in the weirdness of the moment. Holy awkwardness. I give the disciples credit for not fleeing the premises. And I'm not just referring to the inherent awkwardness of foot washing, but to the jolt of seeing this person they were coming to understand as God moving toward them as a servant. We don't always know how the Spirit of Jesus will approach us. Maybe we hardly ever know. But the Spirit of Jesus does approach us unendingly. Holy awkwardness. Personal. The Spirit of Jesus resists forms of comprehension that require any diminishing of personhood. Jesus will not be contained within figurines and idols, whether made of gold or constellations of stars, whether fashioned from ornate legalisms or hefty volumes of theologies. Jesus is free. I am who I am. I have some questions for you. How are the ingrained impulses of your past captivities impacting your well-being right now? How are the ingrained impulses of your past captivities impacting your well-being right now? Can you be open to the holy awkwardness of Jesus washing your feet? In whatever ways that translates into your particular circumstance, even if you can't adequately make sense of Christ's presence, can you be open? Can you behold Jesus moving toward you as a servant? Even as it is blowing your mind, can you behold? Can you let go of needing to make some kind of scientific sense of it? Can you be open to the presence of the Spirit of Jesus right here, right now? Because now is the time. This could be your burning bush, barefoot, awkwardly holy moment. Seize it. Receive this benediction that is more than words. May you swiftly escape your captivities. May you heal from the wounds you've suffered and from guilt over the wounds you've caused. May you be strengthened in your works of kindness and justice. May you acquire a taste for holy awkwardness. May you behold the lover of your soul and washer of your feet, and know that you are beheld by God who loves you. Go in freedom.